106.7 Kennet Radio.
It's 13 minutes past 12 on Kennet Radio, Saturday Chatterday, and I'm joined now by Councillor Ross McKinnon, who is the Shadow Leader of West Berkshire Council. Good afternoon, Ross.
Hello there, thanks for having me on.
That's all right, you're very welcome. Tell us first just about your own ward area. Where is it, and give us a little picture of it.
Yeah, no worries. No, it's absolutely beautiful. It's I represent Bradfield, and that's over there in the east of the district. So it's quite a large ward, actually, but it's largely rural. So it's only me. There's a single member, about 2,800 electors. It goes all the way from Burfield Common. There's a little bit of Burfield Common, which is in my ward in the south. Goes all the way up through Solhampstead, Englefield. Englefield House is in my ward. And then into Bradfield, Bradfield South End. Bradfield College takes up a big part of the ward. And actually goes all the way, it almost touches Pangbourne in the top north of the M4. So it's quite a large area for me to get around at election time. And a lot of the houses aren't very close together. So leafleting is a bit of a challenge, but no, it's a lovely place and it's a real privilege to have been re-elected in May.
So the dust has settled now on the election and you've become the leader of the Conservatives on the council. It's a big change. What's your thinking now? What are you focusing on? What are the priorities?
Yeah, no, it really is a big change. So we went from 24 down to 11 councillors. And again, a huge honour for me to have been chosen as the leader. I think, you know, we want to be two things. We want to be robust and responsible. So, you know, the new administration, they're going to get a lot of things right. You know, of course they are. And inevitably, any administration will, they'll get some things wrong. And we'll certainly call them out and we'll oppose them with robustness when that happens. I mean, before the election, we published our draft council strategy. And we had five overall priorities. So we want to make sure that everyone in West Berkshire has got opportunities for all and they get help when they need it, you know, through social care. We want to protect and enhance our environment, build stronger communities, like make sure West Berkshire remains a great place to live and to work and do business, and to always be looking to deliver public services in even better, more efficient ways. So those have been our five priorities. We hope, we've not seen the Lib Dems council strategy yet, but we hope that they'll be along those lines. And well, we hope to support and oppose at the same time when it's appropriate.
So just talking about some of the issues, first of all, what are your observations on the new direction concerning, well, it's a sort of complicated issue that involves Faraday Road football pitch and also Monk's Lane Sports Hub?
Yeah, look, I think this is very strange. The decision that's been made, it doesn't seem to me there's any upsides of this. So for your listeners, to put it in context, what we planned was to open a new state-of-the-art facility at Monk's Lane. So this is the sports hub. 3G pitch, stands, you know, real home for top level or high level sport, as well as being open for all the residents to use. So that was one sort of strand of the plan. And then the former pitch at Faraday Road, which is part of the London Road Industrial Estate, now called the Bond Riverside Estate, that was earmarked for commercial regeneration. So we would be looking to create dozens, hundreds of jobs on that site. So that was a win-win from our point of view. Now, the new decision, which now we've not had an official announcement that the sports hub's going to be cancelled, but reading the election literature, that's what was promised, is that there's now going to be some form of football on the grass pitch at Faraday Road and no alternative facility. So you're not going to get the job creation on that site. You're not going to get the economic development, and neither do you get the top class facility over in Monk's Lane. So it's a bit of a strange one. And I really can't see the motivation behind it, other than it was a nice little headline grabber for them during the election. You know, there's been a few noisy people, sort of Faraday Road or nothing football diehards, if you like, who seem to think that football can only ever be played at the bottom of this industrial estate in Newbury. Unfortunately, from our point of view, that's at the expense of everyone else.
One of the things Lee Dillon said when I spoke to him was that in the Monk's Lane pitch, you couldn't get, say, Newbury going into the league, but you could potentially do it at Faraday Road. What's your thoughts on that?
Well, the Monk's Lane pitch was not only the original plan was quite a high step level, so I think they could get promoted, I think, two divisions. And then there was scope for adding a little bit on to make it even better. Now, at Faraday Road, again, we've not seen any concrete proposals yet, but it's going to cost an absolute fortune to get that place ready for, you know, the same sort of high level step facility. So I would definitely dispute what Lee's saying there. As I said, there doesn't seem to be any upside. It's a nice headline, you know, football back at Faraday Road, but when you delve into it, it's going to cost jobs and it's not going to be as good a site. It's a grass pitch at Faraday Road, so that's going to be able to take about 6 hours of football a week. At the Sports Hub, 3G pitch, that could be open 16 hours a day, 7 days a week. It's not just for the football club. It's not just for the rugby club. It's for sportsmen across West Berkshire, sportsmen and women across West Berkshire, to use as a community facility. And you're just not going to be able to do that on the grass pitch at Faraday Road, because in the winter when it's raining, it'll churn up and it's not going to be there. So, you know, you'd expect me to see this. But I think this was just one of the things that they said to get elected. You know, it was a nice headline, football back at Faraday Road. But when you delve into it, it's a lose-lose, really, from our point of view.
You've had a finance hat on for several years. What are your concerns over the finance? Because everything comes back to finance, doesn't it?
Yeah, of course. I mean, I think every council in the country would say that they don't have enough money to do everything that they would want to do. And you know, we're no exception. You're right. I was the finance portfolio holder for 4 years. So I presented four budgets to the council. The one last year in March was undoubtedly the most challenging. And that's down to one factor alone, which is inflation. So much of the council's costs, so the cost of providing services, so social care services, etc., they're all inflation linked because we have to pay external providers to do that and they need to cover their costs. Also, big chunk of the budget goes on council pay. And the pay award is, you know, nobody got an 11% pay rise last year, but as inflation is higher, there's more pressure on the pay award. So with inflation not going anywhere, it's hanging around a lot longer than even the Bank of England forecast. I would expect this year's budget to be even more challenging, or just as challenging, really. So the reserves are good. So we've left the finances in a good state. The reserves are higher than when we took control in 2019 over the last 4 years, but there's never enough money. So it's all about tough choices. And, you know, one thing that does concern me is that the Lib Dems have promised to remove the garden waste charge, you know, the extra 50 quid or so that people have to pay to have their green waste taken away. Look, I think that's going to go, I reckon that's going to be a U-turn, because that's £1.2 million every year that's going to be supporting services. I don't see how they can do that, really, without putting even more pressure on the budget. So, you know, I think it'd be the right thing to do not to remove that charge. Even the Green Party didn't go there. They recognised, actually, that it was a reasonable source of revenue. But I would expect a screeching U-turn on that one. It wouldn't be a huge surprise.
But I think they said they would do it for the underprivileged and then as finances allow for the rest, didn't they?
Yeah, I listened to Lee's interview on your programme a couple of weeks ago, and he said that by the end of the administration, by the end of the four-year term, they would have fully removed it. So that's £1.2 million there. You know, I would just question those who are least able to afford that charge, by definition, don't pay it. I mean, it's an optional charge. If you really can't afford it, then there are other ways of disposing of your green waste. You can compost, you can take it to the tip yourself. So I'm not sure that's a well thought out plan, really. And, you know, most councils around the country do charge for green waste. Lib Dem, Conservative, Labour, you know, it's not a hugely controversial thing. I think it's a promise they didn't need to make. I think now that they've been elected, they'll be regretting making it. And, you know, I'm in two minds about it because I don't think it was the right thing to do. But now having promised it, if you promise something, then you should do it. So I think they're in a bit of a pickle with that one. They did, when we presented our budget back in March, one of the front benchers said that, look, the Liberals didn't bring any amendments to our budget, but they promised us an emergency budget if they won control of the council. No sign of that yet. So are we going to get an emergency budget? I don't think we are.
I think Lee mentioned VIRE-ing. VIRE, you know, where they just take things from one budget line to another.
Yeah,
as you go.
That's fine. And you would do that anyway. So, you know, when you set the budget in March, obviously things change. So as the year progresses, you make little tweaks to it. And the way the council constitution works is that every quarter, the executive have to present the current budgetary position. Now, I don't dispute that that's the right thing to do. I would just question that it was perhaps a reckless thing to say before the election, saying that there would be an emergency budget. Well, if you promise something, then you should do it. And I think we're already seeing a bit of backtracking there.
Do you think there's any scope for more sharing with other councils, say in Berkshire? Because obviously we have the public protection and the fire that's shared. Do you think there's any scope there?
Yeah, there is. I mean, if you look at the six Berkshire authorities, they're all relatively small unitary authorities. So you get economies of scale by sharing services. You're quite right. Public protection partnership, environmental health, that kind of thing. That was originally a three council operation. It was ourselves, Bracknell and Wokingham. Now, Wokingham, for their own reasons, decided to withdraw from that. But yes, there is. A lot of it's already happening. And what you don't want to be doing is getting locked into an arrangement with, let's say, a 10-year deal like the Public Protection Partnership was, and then one of the councils pulls out. So there's pros and cons of it. Yes, it can be cost efficient, but you then lose a little bit of control about what happens in the future. But in principle, that's absolutely sensible for them.
Another big issue, the local plan. What's your view on that going forward?
Yeah, look, I mean, the local plan, I think they're in a real mess on this one. I know it's a theme I've brought before. Now, politically, I can understand it. You know, they've been out of power for 18 years. They've gone hell for leather on this one, saying, look, let's just say what it takes to get ourselves elected. But on the local plan, the Liberals spent 4 years helping put this plan together through a cross-party working group. The Greens were involved as well. It's so complex. And we got to a position in November where everyone was happy with it. The Lib Dems, Tony Vickers, their planning spokesman, he's now the executive member for planning. He publicly said, look, we're broadly happy with this. We will not vote against it on the 1st of December. Well, a week later, guess what happened? They voted against it. Now, there's only one explanation for that. They remembered there was an election coming up in May and they wanted to put clear blue water between themselves and us. Now, it all hinges on this site in Thatcham, but there's no good options, right? If you pull one thread of that local plan, the whole thing unravels. It's all interlinked. So you can't just pick and choose which one you go for. If they withdraw the local plan, which is an option for them, they have to start again from scratch. It's going to cost millions. Again, we just talked about the budgetary pressures. They're not in a position to do that. And also there's a big risk of losing this five-year land supply, which is, can you demonstrate to the planning inspector that you've got 5 years worth of land? If that happens, look at Wokingham again next door. They've been suffering from this a lot. Developers bring an unsuitable application. It's rightly refused, but they go to appeal and they get it through because we don't have a local plan that can demonstrate that supply. You end up with a horrible mixture of chaos and concrete. And it, as I said, if you pull one thread, the whole thing unravels. And they know that. And they're sort of scrabbling around for ideas now. I listened to Lee on your show a couple of weeks ago. He suggested knocking down Kennett School and putting a load of houses in there. Tony Vickers has said, oh, the villages can take extra houses if they don't go in Thatcham. It's all kind of back of a fag packet stuff. You know, the plan takes years to put together for a reason because everything's got a knock-on effect with everything else. So even just yesterday, Paul, they've been granted an extension to respond to the inspector, to the inspector's questions, because at the moment they don't know what to do. I think they're in a real pickle on it, to be honest. The council's senior, the expert planning officers, back in November, December, we all agreed it was a robust local plan. It was ready to be submitted. The Liberals agreed that before they changed their mind. Now, politically, the Lib Dems can do what they want. They can say, oh, no, we've changed our mind. The council's planning officers can't do that. I mean, they're professionals. Their reputation's on the line. I don't know what they're going to do because the officers have submitted this plan in December saying, yeah, we're happy with it. And now they're under political pressure to say that it isn't. So it is a bit of a mess, Paul. I've got to be honest with you.
Potholes. What's your thought on those?
No one likes a pothole. Now, you drive around the roads, you notice potholes. You know, I do, you do. So I'd say a couple of things. Firstly, the council is very good, certainly historically has been very good about responding to potholes and filling them in when they get notified. And also, if you drive over into Reading or South Oxfordshire, you instantly see that the roads in West Berkshire are a pretty good standard, better than those. That does not help West Berkshire residents, though, who drive over a pothole and break a wheel. So, yeah, it's a real scourge at the moment. And I think it's the case across the country as well. When you have a very wet winter followed by a bit of a cold snap, it's just carnage for the roads. So everyone's suffering there. I would say, though, that historically we have fixed dangerous potholes within 72 hours. I know that was a Liberal election promise. They've actually proposed a target which is less robust than what happens at the moment. But telling residents that, we all hate potholes, we all want to see them fixed. It takes money. It takes money to do that. And, well, we've just talked about the financial pressures that are coming from this garden waste pledge from the local plan. It's a real juggling act. It's a balancing act to hang all that together. So, yeah, they've got a tough job on with that.
And you mentioned the process, you know, when people call up street care or whatever it's called these days and complain about a pothole. But isn't there a case for actually just going out and looking, drive along the main roads? You can actually see them before, rather than waiting for somebody to call.
What, as in have inspections of the highway done routinely by council officers?
Yeah.
Well, look, I mean, that makes perfect sense, but I'm just going to draw you back to what I said ago. It costs money.
Yeah, yeah.
So the highways budget is limited. In a sense, isn't it better for members of the public to notify us? Because they're there. They're all the time. They can be our eyes and ears. Yeah, in an ideal world, if finance was unlimited, absolutely. You know, we'd have fleets of vans driving around the district every week notifying it. But really, it's probably most efficient for the public to notify us. And can I just stress, please do notify us. You know, you do see on Facebook and social media a lot where people are complaining about potholes and everyone has a good old stushy about it. And then someone asks the question, have you reported it? They go, oh, no. It's like, well, report it and then it will get fixed. Yeah.
We've got a little bit of time. Is there any topic you'd like to talk about?
I would say that, you know, obviously, I've made some criticisms of the new administration here. I think they're completely valid. I would say to your listeners that on a personal level, myself and my colleagues and the new administration, we got on very well. You know, we've got good relationships. So, you know, we're certainly not going to be the case of we're just going to be wreckers and we're going to just criticise everything that happens. I think all 43 of us, all 43 members on the council, we're there because we want to do our bit for the residents of West Berkshire. We want to make life even better for the residents of West Berkshire. We just disagree sometimes about how best to do that. So I would give an assurance to the listeners that that's always at the back of our mind. And I'm sure that Lee and David Marsh is the leader of the Green Group, and Clive, our first Labour member, they all feel the same way. So I've only been in the council for 4 years, and sometimes it's got a little bit heated in the chamber, and that's kind of right and it's wrong. You know, examination by fire is often you get good ideas out of that and bad ideas are criticised. But certainly my experience from colleagues in other councils is that West Berkshire is a grown-up authority. The councillors on there, by and large, are there to do the right thing, to work together. So we're always happy to work cross-party with the administration. We think we've left a good council. You know, the education-wise, you know, 98% of pupils get one of their choice of schools, 95% of schools rated good or better. The finances are in a good shape. So we want to help the new administration keep that going. And we'll certainly work with them to do that, given the opportunity.
We talked, first of all, about your ward. Hmm. If you had a group of students in front of you now, what would you say to them in terms of why be a councillor?
Being a councillor is... from a selfish point of view, so there's two sides of this. Number one, you do it because you enjoy it. You know, we don't have to do this. You hear sometimes, again, criticisms, all councillors are just in it for the money. There's really not a lot of money around, to be honest. So if anyone wants to be a councillor to coin it in, you're in the wrong area. But it's hugely fulfilling personally, like the happiness and satisfaction you get from helping residents. I mean, my main job is not leader of the opposition. It's being the ward member for Bradfield. And residents come to me with problems. Sometimes I'm not able to help because it's out of the council's purview, but a lot of the time you are. And that's just a wonderfully fulfilling thing from a selfish point of view. It's really interesting. You get to meet senior people, both in and out of politics, from all walks of life. You get a real sense of satisfaction from doing that, I think. And aside from that, it's just a good thing to do for the community. You can make a real difference. I always used to say that, you know, Lynn Docherty, she was the leader in the last administration, absolutely magnificent leader. And I thought that a leader of the council, and Lee will be in this position now, has actually got far more influence to shape the local area than a backbench MP would, for instance. So you do get the chance to change things for the better and to make a real positive difference for your community. So I would recommend it wholeheartedly.
Thanks very much indeed for talking to us. That's Councillor Ross McKinnon.